Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. The last couple of days, tea time, there's been, of course, a variety of discussions. But something that's come up in my mind both these last couple of days is a recollection of the perspective of the Buddha and the framework of the Buddha's teachings is pointing back to an original purity or an original luminosity of the heart, and that's a really important perspective. Because the thing that came to my mind was from old documentary about the royal family in Thailand, and King of Thailand's being interviewed by BBC documentary. Kind of a British interviewer, and asking about his role in Buddhism, his life as a Buddhist and whatnot, and then questioning the comparison to, say, Christianity of the doctrine of original sin, and the king being a bit befuddled and concerned, and so, you know, well, no, we don't really have that belief at all. We have a belief in original purity, and that's a very different framework for how we approach ourselves, view the world around us, and then also. In kind of relation to that, then of course there's a very explicit short discourse in the Anguttara Nikaya, the connected discourses, where the Buddha saying, you know, this mind is luminous. It's only stained by adventitious defilements, in the sense that defilements that come and go, but the baseline or the opportunity that we have to return to, as long as we don't get caught up in the visitors to the mind, is this luminosity, this quality of clarity and well-being, that's not a small thing. It's a really big deal, really. And our practice or our training is one of being able to, say, not forget that opportunity for luminosity and clarity, or that fundamental purity. I mean, it's not absolutely pure, but it's better than what what we usually opt for. And the training is one, say, that when we when we pay attention to our, yeah, our virtue, integrity, we have a commitment to a training in the precepts, we have a willingness to be consistent in being attentive, alert, aware, mindful, allowing the mind to settle and be inwardly stable, still, and take an interest in investigation, discernment, reflection, contemplation, then we'll start seeing for ourselves there's no advantage to hopping on the train of our moods that keep taking us to confusion and agitation. There's no advantage to that. There's no benefit. They might be attractive, they might be compelling because of their kind of the sense of irritation or how strongly we hold to a particular view, but they're ultimately not fulfilling. And they don't bring us to a place of peace. So that reminding ourselves of this opportunity for inward luminosity and an experience of peace. So that our training isn't necessarily trying to force the mind into peacefulness or force the mind into wisdom. It's sort of, so much of it is just learning how to get out of the way and let the mind be still, let the mind be radiant, let the mind be happy, let the mind be wise. It's easy to say, but it's even easier to forget. That's the problem of our human existence. So when we develop our meditation, is learning how to be patient and lifting up an interest in what is really of value to us. So we taking a very simple object. I mean, there's many, many, many different objects, but most of them are quite simple. I would say, like the most common one is the breath, and just lifting that object up into the mind, and learning how to be patient and consistent in remembering to be present, remembering to be interested. And just paying attention as the breath comes in, as the breath goes out. Connecting with the experience of the body, relaxing the body, taking an interest in the experience of the of within the mind. And that experience of the breath coming in, experience of the body, just taking an interest in clarifying it, staying with it, being patient enough to sustain that interest, being patient enough to not get discouraged when we lose our mindfulness, when we forget, because it's mind. In the same way that everything else is an impermanent phenomena, mindfulness is an impermanent phenomena also. But we can keep lifting the mind up to being attentive, mindful, aware, and that habit becomes increasingly skillful, increasingly consistent. And as we continue to just training the mind, training the heart to remember its birthright or its legacy of luminosity, and that is it's a real encouragement to ourselves, and it keeps grounding us in truth. Of course, we also investigate the quality of our experience. What do we experience? What grabs our attention is kind of the pleasure, pain, happiness, suffering, gladness, sadness, and those are. That's really ordinary. That's fundamental to our experience. But we tend to rather than approaching that with a certain clarity of luminosity and discernment, it tends to we react to it, because the Buddha compares that to a snake, and we of course going grabbing a snake by its head and it just lashes out and bites you, and we are reacting to suffering, pain, sadness, the things that we don't like or don't want. But then we also grasp after the pleasant things that are create a certain gladness or happiness in the mind, or think it's going to give happiness to us, and so that way, that head of the snake, that's really dangerous. I'll stay away from that. So we grab the tail, and it just whips around and bites you anyway. Because we run after, either run towards, run away from those fundamental experiences, and the path of the Buddha's teachings is not really it's not really about pleasure, pain, happiness, suffering, but it's really about peace and clarity, contentment. And so that's sort of outside the bounds of the head of the snake and the tail of the snake, and learning how to take an interest in something that's not within that spectrum, something that steps out of that spectrum, it's something that again we have to train ourselves or familiarize ourselves or experiment and see, well, how does that work? Because the other by that that happiness, suffering, pleasure, pain is so, we're so used to it, or we're so conditioned by it, that being peaceful or being clear or being content doesn't grab us in the same, doesn't interest in us in the same way. But it's important to again, it's like that lifting up the heart to recognize its birthright or legacy of that luminosity, that clarity, that is possible, and that is there for the taking, but we overlook it, or we look past it. So that, and of course, that's what this path of a practice, path of training, path of integrity, of mindfulness, of stillness of mind, of reflective investigation is pointing to. And so that settling of the mind, stilling of the mind is such an important foundation that we have to be, keep taking an interest in, keep training ourselves in that, because the habit of the mind is for it to move, to proliferate, to objectify, and the Buddha points to three fundamental habits of mind that keep the mind moving and proliferating. You know, one is desire, the other is kind of views, and the other is self-identification. Conceit is how it's usually translated, but that's conceit in the English language usually means sort of feeling, assuming oneself to be better than somebody. But conceit in the Buddhist perspective is assuming oneself to be inferior, equal, or superior. So there's no place to stand, which is great, because that's the habit of the mind, is trying to take a stand somehow. How do I compare? What am I? What would I be without my sense of self-identification and the me? So that's learning how to say, oh, there is an alternative, and just seeing how the mind of desire, of attachment, of craving, of clinging, keep setting up an expectation of gratification. We don't feel particularly happy or good right now, but surely when I get that particular object, I get that experience, when I'm somewhere else, doing something else, with somebody else, I'll be happy. And that's what desire keeps. It keeps spinning out a different story that keeps us moving on to something else. It proliferates the mind, keeps the mind proliferating, and so that learning how to just, it isn't as if you try to annihilate desire. All you have to do is sort of say, oh, that is desire. That's what desire feels like. That's what craving feels like. And it dissolves. It's like the story of because oftentimes the personification of defilement, the personification of all that's obstructive and evil is in the Buddhist kind of cosmology is called Mara. And Mara comes as either Mara the tempter, Mara the spinning out some story. And there's suttas in where the Buddha is being either tempted by Mara in some way, or is being berated by Mara that he's really not in. He should be doubting about his awakening, and how the Buddha deals with Mara is, as I said, quite simple, quite straightforward. I know you, Mara. And that, And then Mara is, as soon as he's known, then he has to sort of shrink away with his tail between his legs and disappear. It's just his... So that, I know you, Mara. Because the mind, again, that mind of desire, mind of craving, mind of doubt, mind of whatever, keeps it proliferating, keeps the mind moving, keeps the mind looking for something else, somewhere, somehow, and it's just be able to, I know you, Mara. That's the function of mindfulness and discernment, awareness and clarity. And just, I know you, Mara. And you don't have, it doesn't, it's not some big drama that one has to conceive of and turn into another story that proliferates the mind and spins you out. Just, I know you, Mara. And it's, and Mara fades into oblivion. So that as we, you know, we practice both, whether it's in formal meditation or our day-to-day life, you know, that either that compelling desire or attachment, that movement towards ill will or aversion, or that, or even just confusion and uncertainty, just to be able. Lifting up that heart back to that quality of luminosity. And I know you, Mara. You know, just training with that, working with that, playing with that. You know, but of course we've got storylines that we keep going back to that oftentimes undermine us. But similarly with that, to be able to, I know you, Mara, and not to fall into that habit. It's like there's a great story that image that Ajahn Chah uses of the chicken that, of course, the farmer comes out and throws grain to it every day, and the chicken goes out and eats his fill in the daytime, and goes into the chicken house in the evening, has a nice sleep, gets up in the morning, and then there's food out, and go and peck around and keep feeding and eating, and then every once in a while the farmer comes out and picks him up and I'm going to lift him. Just thinking of the storyline. So, isn't that wonderful? It feeds me every day, gives me a place to sleep, looks after me, gives me attention every day, picks me up. But what he's doing is checking out, how heavy can I? Is he ready for going to market yet? And you're ready to go, and then it's gone, and the chicken didn't see it coming, and so that you know, we, for ourselves, you know, that you know, to the stories we tell ourselves, either we get caught in our the desire mind. This gratifying desire, or we get caught in the kind of the negativity line of that keeps us upset and indignant about the nature of ourselves or the world around us, and you know, those are storylines that just filling up the time. Waiting for the farmer to come. Okay, yeah, time to go off to market. It's we've got this opportunity to practice. We've got these teachings that we can follow. We've got hearts that are fundamentally trainable and luminous. It's like keep coming back and establishing oneself in that, keep encouraging, keep drawing close to the conditions that will support that. Not wasting time, not getting caught in the things that distract us, because the distractions are it's sort of like, oh, when, you know, I'll really practice when I don't have any more distractions. And even living in the monastery, we can distract ourselves. We just have to keep picking up these simple themes and encouraging ourselves and just recognizing that going against the habit of that proliferating mind, and then when we see that clearly, it drops away, and it isn't as if one has to make oneself peaceful or clear. It's there, and because it's the fundamental nature of the mind. We just have to give it its opportunity. And this is what the teachings are for. This is what the teachings give us, the tools and the framework to establish that. So just to encourage us all establish that kind of fundamental, and it's fundamental right view, so that we can keep reestablishing ourselves in this path, because it takes us, in one direction only, and that's to peace, to freedom, to offer that for reflection this evening.